Live from the Xfinity Studios at WVON. We're your original social media. The Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON.
The views expressed on our programs are not necessarily those of WVON, Midway Broadcasting Corporation, or our participating sponsors.
We are back on the Buchanan and Seton Show in the home stretch in the final hour, and we are still, we're giving it to you. Whew. It's power packed. You feel free to join us at 773-591-1690. Real quick question from our board op over there. What do you know about Raising Hell?
Not a lot.
Right.
Well, we're here jamming.
What do you know about Raising Hell? This, just as a side bit of information, I got this. This was like one of my most coveted prize Christmas gifts.
Really?
When I was like, 11, 12, one of my mother's best friends bought me the album on wax. This is Run DMC, Raising Hell. And they bought me the album on wax, and I played it.
Let's go all the way back, because you may have some listeners that don't understand what on wax means.
Oh, they know.
Do they?
Oh, yes. On VON, they know.
Yeah, WVON has listeners. I mean, I just felt like they may have a younger audience that doesn't really understand that.
They know. No, these young people don't know about that. But the people in VON, they know. So, yeah, I knew he wouldn't have no idea what that is. All right, I'm sorry. It's getting late, and we gotta rein it back in. So we have more information, my friend. Rick Lockhart is filling in for David Seaton tonight. He has been doing a phenomenal job.
Aww.
And now in this hour, we want to talk about the Chicago budget, specifically as it pertains to the police. And we have a phenomenal guest joining us. I want to give him a wonderful introduction. Again, he has a very diverse background, so I'm just going to take a good 30 seconds to kind of give you guys an idea of kind of things you can ask him about, what his history, his experience. He brings a wealth of it. Our guest is Mr. Vaughn Bryant. Vaughn is the executive director of the Chicago Literacy Alliance and joins after spending the last 4 years as the chief program officer for the Chicago Park District, where he was responsible for its largest department, community recreation, which focused on the Park District's core mission of providing high-quality leisure services to Chicago residents and visitors. Vaughn joined the Park District after working on the Violence Prevention Initiative as a deputy officer at the Chicago Public Schools. Prior to his work at CPS, he served as a manager in player development for the National Football League. Worked as a licensed marriage and family therapist. We can talk after the show. and was a former fourth-round draft choice of the Detroit Lions. Vaughn received a master's degree from Northwestern University and his undergraduate degree from Stanford. All right. He is a recent graduate of the Leadership Greater Chicago, serves on the National Advisory Board of the Haas Center for Public Service at Stanford University. This guy does it all.
Does a lot.
We are just privileged to have with us Mr. Vaughn Bryant. How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to hop to it in this late hour. So dealing with the Chicago budget and dealing with the police department, what can we glean about the city's priorities as it pertains to the budget and where they prioritize the police and its citizens?
So first, let me say that I'm currently the executive director of Metropolitan Peace Initiatives. It's a division of Metropolitan Family Services, and that the work I do now is in the violence prevention space, where we convene a collaborative called Communities Partner for Peace, which does a combination of outreach work and case management work and place-based strategy, and we train all of our folks through the Metropolitan Peace Academy. In terms of the budget, if you looked at the budget from last year, they allocated about $11 million towards violence prevention. And this year, it's $36 million. So one of the things I said, you know, during last year's budget is that, you know, we know what the budget situation is. We consider this a down payment. We trust Lori and her administration to continually increase the investment in what we all believe is the number one priority in our city, which is making it a safer city.
Now, that said, because, you know, again, there are some people that appear to be critical of the increase of funds, but just playing devil's advocate here, how much did the unrest over the summer of George Floyd's killing, all of the looting and all the violence, have to do with that change in the budget?
I mean, I don't know that I could speak to that. All I can say is that...
I mean, would that be reasonable to assume?
In my mind, I think that even if George Floyd not happened, I think it's reasonable for us to assume that violence could have increased, because we have to acknowledge the years, the decades of systemic oppression, and that, you know, violence is not going to be a straight line down. It's going to be more like a spiral down, hopefully, if we continue to make investments in this space. So I say that to say that there probably would have been an increase anyway, because we're dropping the bucket towards what we need to spend on this issue. So the comparison would be the city of New York and the city of L.A., they spend $36 million and $30 million, respectively, out of their city budget on violence prevention. They've long had, for, you know, at least 15-plus years, offices of violence prevention. We just started that in Chicago during the last administration, so we're just coming up on a year for that office. So we haven't really built the infrastructure from a governmental level around violence prevention like some of our peer cities. So I can't imagine they would start that office last year and not continue to build it and grow it to address this issue.
Okay, so you're excited about the increase in spending.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's something that, I mean, I in my mind, no matter where you live in the city of Chicago, if we get our city to be a safer city where all of our, you know, children and families can grow up and thrive, it's going to be good for everybody. Like, I see that as a positive. And I would go on record and saying next year in their fiscal year 21 or 22, it'll be even more, because I think there's energy around doing more in this space, and there's more healing that has to happen in our communities. And I don't think this could come from the city budget, but I think I'm a believer in reparations. Like, I think we have to have a way to repair and restore a lot of the losses that, you know, Black people specifically have taken, brown people as well, but definitely Black people around housing discrimination. If you read Natalie Moore's book, you know, there's a $3 or $4 million extraction of generational wealth that came out of our communities. That kind of stuff, wealth doesn't go away. That it just transfers from one hand to another, and that's, I think we're owed that sort of thing, and I think it's going to take that sort of bold moves in order to couple with the healing that has to happen in order to make our city the best it can be.
Sounds like he wants to be a part of our last 30-minute conversation,
You know, I was going to say that, actually. Mr. Bryant, this is Rick. I want to say, you know, it sounds like that there's a lot of push that you've been involved with when it comes to working with this budget and getting it approved. My first question, though, when you mentioned kind of comparing cities, are we in Chicago using, or is Chicago using comp cities as, or New York and Los Angeles as comp cities? Are these the locations that we're looking at and saying, you know, well, we're comparing ourselves to what happens in the activity and the amount of spending that these two other cities are doing? Is that kind of the outlook?
So the outlook is that you have to look at like cities, and being the third largest city, it's, you know, it's easy to compare ourselves to New York, L.A., and Houston, because, you know, those are just the other peer cities in terms of population. Like, and even in that, like, before I moved here, I was living in Brooklyn. New York is three times the size of Chicago. So even
You lived in Brooklyn?
I lived in Brooklyn, yes.
Yeah, I was in Washington Heights. What years were you there? Never mind. We'll talk about that later. Go ahead.
Because
I really want to know which one do you think is better. We can compare all day long, but please, go ahead.
Yeah. No, it's all good.
That pizza conversation always seems to come up.
So, just say that to say that we compare ourselves just in the sense that we're major cities, and major cities have unique challenges that, you know, are, you know, specific to being highly populated. But even in that, obviously, there's going to be differences. And you also want to look at cities that have had, you know, success dealing with violence prevention and lowering crime. And those cities have done that. So I think all of us on this call are old enough to remember Rodney King. During that time, L.A. went into a consent decree because, you know, they realized that the policing practices back then were, you know, out of whack and terrible. And so they went on a 20-year journey of police reform, and street outreach became a critical part of their strategy. And so they've done it for, you know, that's going on 30 years now. And so Chicago had a history of street outreach, but they didn't have the consistent funding and sustainable funding in the way that some other cities have done. And so, though, you know, I think historians of this work would say that we started it, people who came after us sustained it and perfected it in a different way. And I think now that we're back in the game in this more sustainable way, you know, we're doing some things that are innovative. But for me, none of that matters as much as the success of us making our city safe. Like, it's not about the strategy. It's not about comparisons. It's really about caring about the people in our city, doing what it takes to, you know, keep them off the street, give them a path to a dignified life, and, you know, again, well, make this a world-class city.
And just out of curiosity, we're talking about the in the next half hour, the rapid relief executive order four that's on Governor Pritzker's desk, that's really been kind of pushed and piloted by the ADOS community. But I'm wondering, to your point, when we look at where the budget is going, how involved are you with monitoring how this budget and these finances are being allocated, right? So are we spending?
Not at all. Like, I'm not. So my role, I work for a nonprofit, so I'm not really involved in how the budget is crafted or how it's followed. Like, I am the recipient of some city funds to work on violence prevention, and so they're really more monitoring, you know, my work, and I'm working collaboratively with the city and the state and the county and local partners across the city of Chicago, you know, to really coordinate all of our work together so that we can put our citizens in the best position to be successful and really build the capacity of the local organizations, you know, who are doing the hard work every day trying to make our city safe.
Mr. Vaughn, this is a T-butt, so I understand that you're not involved in that, but let me ask you to speculate a little bit. Based on what you do know, based on your own observations, I should say, where do you think fiscally the biggest deficits are, and what areas desperately need the money, or if they got the money, would make the most improvements?
You mean which areas of our city, or?
Which, as far as programs, directives, as far as allocating the money, where does it need to go to more police officers? Does it need to go to more mental health experts?
Right.
Like, where do you think the biggest deficits are that this increased budget should be focused on?
Yeah, so I think public safety is the biggest thing. And let me give you an example. So you will hear a lot of Chicagoans say, oh, well, you know, we don't have, you know, a rec center or, you know, a gym for our kids to play. And having the experience I have had working both at Chicago Public Schools and the Park District, that's honestly simply not true. Like, we have you know, over 200 field houses in the city of Chicago, 77 pools across the city of Chicago. The issue we have is that as a parent, if you live in certain communities in the city, you don't feel comfortable having your kid go to the Park District to go get that recreation or that after school program because of the community.
So it's a public safety issue.
If we can make the community safer, then everybody has access to the rich resources that a city like Chicago has. Like, think about After School Matters. After School Matters is diffused throughout the city, north side, west side, south side. It partners with the Park District to deliver a lot of those programs. You know, thousands of kids do that every year. It's just that in certain communities, you're going to have less access, partly because of the crime issue we have. So if we can solve that part and kids can move to and from safely, then all of the opportunities that are afforded, you know, every other kid in this, you know, on the south and west sides, which we know are primarily where a lot of the violence happens.
Wow. No, it's interesting to me to hear that. You know, when we talk about the increase in the budget and in allocating the resources to, you know, the areas that they need to go into, and public safety being on the top of that list, I'm always, you know, for me, I'm always interested in How much of that is going into mental health resources and healthcare,
yeah.
right? And the direction of creating that. I mean, we're looking at what Mercy. That's it's on the brink of closing in February, I believe, right? So,
oh wow. Mm-hmm.
What's that?
I just said, oh, I didn't know that.
Mercy Hospital.
Yeah, Mercy Hospital. Right. Right. So, yeah. So you know, clearly there needs
that's
to
on 26.
South Loop is it 26th?
Yeah.
I just know it's right on 55. Like when you're driving down 55, right?
It's on 26th Street. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. But you know, you look at that and these issues that are taking place within our communities, right? Where is the money for resources like that? Where is this really going to? So. It's you know, it's one of those conversations and discussions that I'd love to be at the table with to find out where that money is going. But ultimately, public safety being, again, one of the bigger places that the resources should go, we still have a critical need for healthcare services, for mental health services, for, you know, those things in our communities, too, that's being removed.
Yeah, no, I agree. So I can't speak to the hospitals, but I can definitely tell you that, you know, as part of this city budget, they do have money, like they have a new set of dollars that is going to behavioral health is what they call it these days. I know the states that spends money on behavioral health. There's some structural challenges with how Medicaid is billed, and we also have some challenges with just the incentives for licensed clinical social workers and psychologists in terms of where you make the most money is oftentimes on the administrative side of social services. So I don't want to get into the weeds of that, but having been in the mental health field myself and sort of being at an agency that has a breadth of different services, you know, I can tell you that we have to find another financial model to make the behavioral health work. And then I think the other thing that, you know, we have to talk about is the people who need mental health services the most. One, it's not accessible because there's not a lot of people, you know, providing that service in these neighborhoods. But two, there's still a stigma attached to that where people are not going to voluntarily go get mental health services. So there's, you know, challenges on both sides. And that's the work I do every day, is trying to bridge that divide in terms of bringing those services in a non-threatening way, in a non-stigmatized way, to the people who are most vulnerable to gun violence. So that, you know, ultimately people can heal and get their proper education, you know, get job training, and again, put them on a path to living a dignified life. So a lot of the challenges that you guys are laying out, this is the type of work I do on a daily basis, not only doing the violence prevention work, but convening and working with other partners to make sure all of the wraparound services that the most vulnerable people need get those services in a sustained way.
Are you guys at all directly or indirectly linked with CPS?
I would say indirectly. Our population specifically is focused on adults. The Department of Family Support Services is building a similar infrastructure that's more focused on youth. And when we talk about that, you know, we're talking about people who are disconnected from school, who, you know, are not necessarily connected to any sort of institution, that really highest risk people who are either doing the shootings or influencing shootings, or, you know, are in a circle of folks who, you know, are vulnerable to get shot based on, you know, conflicts they may have in their neighborhood. So that's the population we're trying to get to. Now, if it's youth, then we obviously want to reengage them in the school system. But for adults, you know, it may be subsidizing GED attainment. It may be subsidizing their ability to go through job readiness training, doing job fairs, and sort of getting them on a path to, you know, to starting a career, given, you know, making them a part of a cohort of people where they can have, you know, group therapy sessions, where they can, you know, work together and build each other up and support each other on a positive path. Because the reality is, like, I don't know if you guys watch Power, I assume.
I've never seen it.
Well, I'm a little bit behind on the
I've never seen it, but go ahead and make your point.
You should definitely check it out.
I've never watched it.
Wow. Okay. So anyway,
there was some judgment there, T-Bob. I think he's judging you a bit, man.
Absolutely some judgment. And on that Run DMC, y'all didn't even give the name of the song. Y'all gave the name of the album. So
it was the album. Yes.
Right.
Yeah, but Rockbox is the name of the song. So I just want to make sure we all clear
on that. Hold on, because my producer sent me a message.
There's some discrepancy there.
Already, yeah. My producer, Breon, said that. Hold on, what did he say?
No, I think he said that the name of it was...
The name of the song is Rock.
King of Rock.
King of Rock.
Yeah, no, that's not King of Rock. Oh. You know, the King of Rock, there is no higher. Like, that's a different song. Rock Box is which up.
Anyway,
let me get back to that.
Go ahead.
Do that for you all.
On the show, you know, there's a guy that they call Ghost to James St. Patrick.
I know, that's the white
and
guy.
No.
James St. Patrick is Ghost. He's the main character.
I'm sorry. Never mind. Go ahead.
Y'all must be being sarcastic. Y'all seen the show.
I have never seen it.
Atiba
I've heard
never
the names,
seen it.
But I've never seen the show.
I've watched it. I'm a little bit behind on this season.
Yeah, so that's the black guy. So he is a street guy who wants to turn good. And part of the show is his wife and all of the people around him not really being able to see him as anything but a gangster, whereas in his mind, he wants to do something different. He wants to open up a nightclub and just really turn his life around. And the reason I give that example is that sometimes we grow up in a particular community, and I think athletes feel this too. If you want to turn your life around, you need to be in an environment where people around you support that. Yep. And people are not trying to bring you back to potentially who you used to be or mistakes that you've made before, but enable and push you and support you towards a positive path. And so that's the sort of thing that we're trying to build in our communities where, you know, our outreach workers are a good example. Most of the people that our local partners hire are people who are formerly street involved, a lot of people formerly incarcerated who turned their lives around and are really trying to work towards making our city safe. But even with those guys who come through our Peace Academy, you know, they're one step away from the people that they're trying to save on the street. And they need support that they get from each other to stay on a positive path and be able to talk about some of the challenges they have and some of the, you know, what would I call them? I can't even think of the word I'm looking for. Temptations of, you know, going back to the street, that sort of thing. And, you know, we all need support around that. So if you think about, you know, the people you're around, they're going to be positive people who are doing something similar or have a vision for their life. And we all need to have, you know, a community of folks that are pushing us in a positive direction. Sure. And that's part
of it. Bryant, thank you so much for joining us this evening. We're coming up on the heartbreak. We would love for you to remain a friend of the show as this budget begins to play out and then the resources are allocated. We'd love for you to come back and break it down for us.
Yeah, just don't keep me up this late.
You got it. We get you earlier next time. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a good night.
Thanks, Bob.
You're listening to the Buchanan and Seaton Show on WVON, The Talk of Chicago, AM 1690. We'll be right back.
More from Buchanan and Seaton, plus your phone calls, coming up on The Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON.